Hello guys, it's Jane again. I'm so excited about this evening's podcast. I had posted and kind of given y'all an idea about what it was about. As most of you know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Very important topic. I think it's extremely underrated, not spoken about nearly enough. And something that's very, very dear to my heart. You all know that I have never shied away from the fact that I've struggled from mental illness most of my life. And I don't think there's ever a moment where you are completely healed from it. Through my social media, through You Are Enough, everything that I do is just me living it out day in and day out and sharing with you, you know, the highs, the lows. So anyway, tonight I'm really excited that my son Dylan has joined me. Dylan, can you say hi?
Hello.
First of all, I just want to say how proud I am of him that he's willing to do this. You know, it's hard enough, first of all, to even admit that you're struggling mentally, to say it out loud, but then to be a young man today and to say something, to speak out about it, it's a big deal. And just one of the many, many things that I'm proud of him for. And so, with that being said, I'm going to just kind of give Dylan the floor just for a second. And he's going to share with you, I think, again, this is unscripted. We're just sitting here chilling in my office talking. So I really don't know what he wants to share. But I just thought I'd open it up to him and just kind of maybe let him introduce himself and just say something from his heart.
So, yeah, like she said, I'm Dylan. I'm her favorite son.
Yes.
By far. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Don't have to fake it.
He's got a sense of humor, by the way.
A little bit. Like she said, I don't know if she said I'm 23, but I'm 23. So, I guess we'll just kind of get straight into it with it being May and Mental Health Awareness Month. You know, there's obviously a stigma behind, you know, being a man, being a young man, and mental health, and, you know, you're taught, you know, push through everything,
yes.
Don't talk about stuff, you know, hide your feelings, hide your emotions, push through, be strong for everybody else.
Yep.
Which is how I would like to approach all of that. I am a talker. But when it comes to feelings and emotions, I'm the opposite, kind of. I don't like to talk about any of that. If I have a struggle, I would like to keep that to me for as long as possible.
Or make jokes.
Yes, or make jokes about it. That's typically how it goes. And I act like that makes it better.
Yes.
But it doesn't. It just makes it better for a second in my head. So, I guess...
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
When was the first time you realized that something wasn't right?
I was actually thinking about this a few days ago because I knew we were going to do the podcast, and I figured that would be something you would ask. I can't think of like a first time, but I look back on being a kid now and kind of how... me struggling with mental health kind of came in different forms when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being maybe like second or third grade, and I was super, super scared to get sick.
Yeah.
I was like a hypochondriac big time. But it was just like anxiety about it, just, and I really struggled with it. But I just thought I was just scared to get sick. But I think that's kind of noticed it there. I had a really bad stuttering problem when I was younger. Didn't want to go to school. I think I cried to mom. Like before third grade, trying to get homeschooled.
Before third grade kicked in, and you literally threw a fit saying you were not going to school.
Couldn't talk. So, it's hard to be in school when you can't talk.
Yeah.
Actually, it turned out to be a blessing because I would talk so much more than I talk now if I didn't have a stuttering problem. So, it's helped me to maybe be a little quieter and moments when I needed to be quiet.
This is you quieter?
This is me quieter. As smart of a mouth as I have now, imagine without a speech impediment.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Jesus.
But yeah, I think just, looking, I guess, younger, just anxiety more than, like, depression per se.
Right.
I know I've kind of always struggled with that, but I kind of just always thought that's what, everybody did that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe they do. They don't realize it. I didn't realize it when I was younger.
Right.
But I look back on it now and I was like, maybe that wasn't a normal feeling. So yeah, that's probably kind of the first time I remember.
So we talk about anxiety and depression because they are two different things. And just, I want to make it clear, Dylan and I, we're not therapists. No. We have no degrees.
I do have a degree.
Not a degree in this.
I have a degree, though.
What is your degree in?
Exercise science.
That's not going to help us with this right now. Maybe not. Go ahead and tie it in, because I know you want to.
Good. I mean, you exercise the brain. You need to exercise and stuff. It helps you with depression. If you're in the weight room all the time, you burn calories, get heart rate up. You helps you breathe. You
battle
your own demons on the inside.
I got you.
We'll talk about that.
So we, you know, we're not experts. We're just here sharing our struggle, our story with it, our perspective. You know, it's not a fix. It's not a cure. It's not the way that maybe if you're listening, you need to handle it. I really feel like mental illness is so unique to the person. I mean, we're just, you know, Dylan was just talking about some of the first signs that he had, you know, with being scared to be sick, you know, just the anxiety of that. And anxiety can come in so many different forms. And there's a lot of anxiety that's just normal, healthy anxiety that we all had, like Dylan said. But some of it can get a little bit deeper. And then you go into depression, and that's a completely different ball game. Sometimes they cross and they each other, but they're, you know, they're two completely different things. Anyway, Dylan, so when do you feel like the word depression came in, you know?
It's kind of, I don't know when I would first say, I think it, how I would remember it would be when we took that one trip to Texas and things went kind of downhill.
You can talk about that a little bit if you need to.
Just, I mean.
Because everybody, and this isn't, you know, just so you know, I share everything.
Right.
Okay, so.
Well, the whole getting kind of kicked out and forced to leave, that was, I don't know, that was something where I think the depression kind of set in. Now, always kind of weird, but, like, I always struggled with, like kids at school, like, have grandparents there or something like that, and grandparents come eat with their kids or stuff like that, and that never happened.
Yeah.
And I was always jealous if I hear, like, friends went and stayed with their grandparents over the weekend, or, you know, the grandparents came to every ball game, or everything like that. And it was just something, like, we never had.
Yeah.
And it's not that it, like, affected me, like, to where I was, like, super down and out, but I was like, why don't I?
Right.
Like, have that. I always felt kind of left out in that regard. So, yeah, that one trip to Texas is kind of where I would say it first set in. I had different feelings I had never really had
right
before. And then that's kind of been a constant battle.
Right.
Since then. Not all derived from that, mm-hmm. but that's like the gate opened and then it's been that way yes. ever since.
You know, he speaks of our trip to Texas, and that's to my parents, my mom and dad. And if you've listened to me at all, you know my history with my parents. You know the exposure to child abuse and neglect and drugs and addiction and sexual abuse and just a very complicated childhood that I had. Growing up, I, you know, wanted to do everything I can to get out of there and to be the exact opposite of my parents when I had kids. I haven't succeeded. Well, let me back up and say I haven't succeeded. All those things that I just said, I have succeeded in not exposed. Don't laugh at me, Dylan. But I always wanted my boys to have a relationship with their grandparents. And they did. Until they got older and they truly started to see and understand, I think, my history without me even telling them. And then when Dylan experienced this side of my dad, I think that's where it really opened up. Something that I've been with my boys is very honest and upfront and open about everything. Even with my depression, with my child abuse, something that I always thought about was that I never wanted them to wonder what was wrong with me. So if they didn't know the truth, then what would have gone on in their minds? What would they have thought? Were mm-hmm. they the cause of it? You know, so I've always been, you know, probably too honest. You think I've been too honest with you, Dylan?
I don't really think you can be too honest.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure I could have sheltered you from things a little bit more, but it is what it is. I think you turned out all right.
Yeah, I've been okay.
Yeah. So, this trip to Texas was a really rough trip. It was eye-opening. It was a pivotal point in their relationship with my parents, especially my dad. And it changed them forever, including my other son, Jackson, as well. It's a pivotal point for him as well. So as far as, you know, your depression, what do you feel like was your lowest that you've been?
Man, I had a pretty big, low, guess in, well, 2016.
Yeah.
When Carmen died.
Yeah.
That was, I guess, something I kind of hadn't experienced. And what made it worse is me and her friendship kind of the months prior to that, and we weren't as close as we had been, and I kind of, I didn't finish that friendship off on the right foot how right. I would have wanted to, so.
You didn't have a good closure no, there.
No, didn't have a good closure, and it was kind of just all taken away. That was tough. It's obviously still something I think about
yeah.
all the time. But it's kind of different now. They're not as dark of thoughts as, like, I had. But, like, you know, back then, you know, I didn't want to close my eyes at all.
I remember you sharing me
just all these visions and stuff yes. I would have, and it was awful. It kind of sounds weird, but I was, like, scared to, like, take a shower.
Yeah.
Just with how she died, and it was just those thoughts and everything, and I still can't watch movies yeah. with, like, drowning scenes. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I have to either fast forward through it or turn away or something like that. I just can't bring myself to do it. Which sucks, because Pearl Harbor is one of my favorite movies.
Bring it back to the funny. The greatest movie of all time.
It's wonderful.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, that was one of them. it was kind of the last, like, 3 years has been a consistent low.
I think that's probably when you realize you needed to finally get some help.
Right.
Okay.
I've stayed away from that as long as I possibly can.
Yes.
Because she'll say I'm stubborn, I'm not.
What's the other word I like to use?
I'm prideful.
That's it. Go ahead.
Those could be two things used to describe me. I wouldn't say they're accurate, but they're probably right.
There's that pride again.
Okay, maybe they're right. But, yeah, I guess it's just kind of all how I understood depression when I was younger was, you know, something bad happens and then you feel down from it. How I've experienced it over the last 3-4 years, it comes from absolutely nothing. And it's not something you can really control at all. You know, I've had moments where I've been really, really happy. But then in my head, I immediately think with happiness, okay, this is going to come down and I'm going to be low again. So I've had this notion, like, if we just stay right there in the middle and not get too happy, I don't have to worry about coming down from it. Or if I can stay in the middle and not get too low, I don't have to worry about staying down there in the low and not being able to get out of it.
Right.
And granted, I've been just torturing myself trying to stay in this middle, because evidently it takes a lot more effort to try to stay there than it does to just feel.
Yes.
But I'm not one to feel. I don't like to. But, yeah, like I said, the last 3 years has been rough with that. I had a lot of thoughts that I've never had before. Not that I've ever, like, wanted to hurt myself or acted on it, but I've had a lot of thoughts of it. And it's, some of them have been ones I can, like, push away really fast, and some of them have, like, truly frightened me. Because they're just not thoughts I would normally have. And like I said, it doesn't come from a moment of, you know, a really bad moment and then I immediately feel down. It could be just a normal day and then like I'm just driving.
Yeah.
Or I'm sitting back in my bed and I just have this thought that overcomes, and it's like it's like a blanket gets put on you. And it's like you can physically feel it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like something's like overtaking you for a moment. And to a lot of people, that's probably going to sound crazy, but that's how it actually feels to me. It feels like something is coming over me and, like, taking control of me for a second.
And that's why I love this, because I want us to share, you know, what it feels like to us. Because, again, it's so unique to everyone. It can come in so many different forms. You know, what you just said to me, and some of that is stuff that I haven't heard before, some of it is, I totally get it, but not on that same level. You know, mine feels a little bit different when I get overwhelmed with depression. And like sometimes I can't physically move. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I'm telling myself to get up, to smile. I mean, I can even tell myself, say Jesus' name over and over and over again. I mean, I can tell myself, and yet I cannot physically do it. Like something has control of my tongue. Something has control of my hands. Something has control of it. And just like you said, it doesn't even have to be circumstantial. It doesn't have to be something that causes it. With clinical depression, it's just there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, you know, an event. Mm-hmm. A lot of times from what I've read, again, I'm not an expert, that a lot of times depression can sometimes start from a traumatic experience.
Right.
But it also, according to doctors, you know, and stuff, that it can be genetic. Mm-hmm. It can be hereditary. I truly believe that my dad suffered with mental illness and was bipolar. You experienced him. Totally. Yes. He was an alcoholic, you know, which is really common with people with depression. I have, you know, siblings that struggle with it. I have other family members that do, so I really feel like ours is probably some mess up in the gene at the same time. But, you know, with me, I do feel like mine starts back, like, the ultimate is with my sexual abuse as a child. Right. And then all of that circled around. So, yeah, you describing it as a blanket covering you in almost like a, what do you call those things that tie you up? A straitjacket?
Straitjacket, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like situation.
Yeah, it's like a, it's, you know, how I think of it, you know, darkness is typically, you know, associated with, you know, emptiness and yes. nothingness.
Yes.
But to me, it's like, you know, darkness is almost like one of the most real things there is. Okay. Like that blanket's like something I can physically feel and like physically see.
Right.
So like, everybody know thinks, you know, oh, you're in darkness, oh, you're in the empty. Like, no, I don't feel like I'm alone in the darkness. It feels like something is there.
It's very heavy in darkness. It's extremely heavy. There's no lightness. There's nothing easy or light or empty about darkness. Darkness is heavy.
Right.
Yes, I totally get that.
It's like darkness feels like it's easier to get to than light.
Yes. Totally get that. Because it's easy.
Like, yeah, it's like light's almost this like impossible thing that you can't reach, right. And like darkness is just like always there.
That was really deep, Dylan, but I totally I know you can, but totally can relate to that, totally can understand that. So recently, you know, you've just recently finally gone to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to talk about what led up to that?
It's just kind of, you know, just more of the same, just kind of just being in that middle nonstop, and I just, you know, was not happy. I couldn't make myself be happy.
Yeah.
No matter if things were going good, I still, just in my head, I couldn't allow myself to be happy.
And you saying that, and anybody listening, that's okay. You know, one thing that people, they try to, well, just go do something to make yourself happy. That's not how depression works. I can promise you that we want to be happy.
I would like to be.
Yes. We would like to stay, yee-haw, and in the light. But you cannot make yourself do it. And one thing that I've learned battling this a lot longer than my 23-year-old son is that I have to hang on tight knowing that I will get through it. I've told him that a million times, you know, with the struggles that he's had, you know, over these years, and when he did share them. I promise it will get better. I promise, because it will. But right now it's not, and it's okay. So that just relieves some the pressure of trying to have to make yourself happy.
Right.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I think just that whole, you know, like I said, not allowing myself to be happy. Like I said, just constantly working and working and working to keep myself to stay in the middle.
Right.
And we had a tough year as a family.
Yes.
A lot of things I still have not allowed myself to, whether it's grieve over or just deal with internally. You know, things go bad and I put it away in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
And I just put it behind whatever that door is and I try to keep it shut. And I figure if it stays shut, it'll just go away at some point and I won't have to think about it anymore.
How does that work for you?
That door doesn't ever close. It just stays open.
It just stays open.
I just pile up more and more in there. It's only got so much space, too.
So this year, what, your perspective of it? Because they know mine. I've shared it.
Well, you know, I mean, 2021, you know, started out with Piper. Just that whole situation led to so much like hurt and just being mad and angry.
Yeah.
And so I was just so mad at God.
Yep.
To where I just tried to almost completely just turn away.
Yeah.
I didn't want nothing to do with it. Just how, you know, seeing my sister, you know, she's going to have a baby. Things are going right for her. We all grew up together. We've all seen a lot of struggle and a lot of pain and heartache.
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing her, you know, with her man about to have a baby, and then just to, you know, be told Piper's diagnosis, and then just, you know, being there and being able to physically see just that struggle, just nonstop struggle. And it was like, it almost felt like some kind of like cruel game to me. It's like, you know, God gave her this, you know, and like we have so much hope and everything like that. You know, she's going to have a baby, she's going to start a family and everything. You give her Piper and we get, you know, 2 months with her. It just, it affected me in ways I didn't think it would.
Right.
I didn't think it would cause that much anger. Just
your relationship with Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think it would do that to me, but it did. And I was in a really, really dark place. Then, like I said, we dealt with that. Stuff with my other sister happened. I won't dive into all that, but
yeah, we'll keep that a little bit private. But it was rough.
Yeah, that one. I want to say it almost like hurt me more.
I understand,
because that was something that made me like physically break down.
Yeah,
because I remember getting up for work in the morning and just. My whole intent was to keep all that a secret.
I know.
And I just broke down to you.
Yeah.
That was hard to see, hard to just deal with. And
know when she's hurting so much.
Yeah, it pained me, but then also I was sitting there, I was like, it's just that me and her are not that different.
No, you're not.
We're actually
a whole lot alike.
Similar.
You are.
Not act in the same ways, but the thought processes, yes, and depression that we deal with nonstop, yeah, is very, very similar. So that, Meemaw dying the day after Christmas, that's also brought back a lot of kind of anger that I'd pushed away, because I mean, I hadn't seen her in 4 years.
Is it your anger towards your papa?
Yes, it brought back a lot of that, because
you blamed him.
I blamed him, and then she died, and I blamed him for me not being able to see her for 4 years. And that's one of my favorite people on the planet.
I know it was.
Just my favorite voice.
Laugh.
Just, there's no other sound I would ever want to hear.
I know it.
If I could hear something play over and over again, it would be her voice, just nonstop. And like I said, I felt like that was taken away from me, not being able to hear that or yeah. see her or spend time with her.
Yeah.
And I put it all on him. I blamed it all on him. And figure out he was sick. And I don't like to talk about my thoughts initially when I figured out about that.
It's okay. You can say whatever.
Because they were not ones of sadness.
I know.
They were ones of more like, that's what he deserves. And that, you know, it kills me to say that, but if I'm going to be honest, that's 100% what I thought.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go see him. I didn't feel like I needed to see him when I didn't get to see her.
Yeah.
You know, she's the one I wanted to see. I didn't care nothing about going to see him. You know, I've been open about how I had a lot of thoughts, you know, like where I didn't care to have his love whatsoever. Didn't care to have a relationship with him. Because it always felt like it wasn't, you know, kind of reciprocated back towards me. But going to see him, it turned out to be a much different trip than I expected it to be. Was quick, was short. Which, if you understand, trips to Texas need to be quick and short. They're not meant to be long and drawn out. But it was, actually, it might have turned out to be the best trip that we've had there. You know, I felt just this massive weight lifted off of me just getting to talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like I came in, you know, with, you know, my eyes open. I kind of wanted to see him for him. I didn't want to see him through, you know, my lenses that I'd put on for all these years. Yep. And just layers and layers and layers of what I want to see him through.
Right.
So that I don't have to feel anything for him. I wanted to peel back that and see him for who he is. You know, I just realized, you know, so much, you know. First and foremost, now I realize, you know, that he did love me.
Yeah.
He loved me a lot.
Yep.
Also realized I loved him a lot, too. Yeah. And always have. I just didn't want to say it because I didn't feel like he deserved it. But it just brought, I guess just took all that anger. I mean, not all of it. Some of it, you know, still remains. But just, I started thinking about all the trips he took and seeing how he took care of me, Ma, all the time. Yeah. And just kind of, I'd said this before, but how I didn't understand how I would learn from him what it means to love somebody. Because I would have never expected to say that ever. But then I started thinking back on all the memories. I'm like, no, that's what it means to love somebody. Yeah. And just seeing, you know, kind of how we were treated and just understanding his pain and everything he's been through. And obviously, you know, his mental state.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of his, you know, responses and stuff towards us were just, you know, reactionary to what was going through in his mind. Yeah. Or him trying to deflect pain that he didn't want to feel. And then, you know, putting that onto us. And it didn't ever mean that he didn't love us or anything like that. It was just is how he had to deal with things.
Right.
And I understand that and I respect it because I do the same thing. It's not the same responses, but I deflect all the time. I typically deflect with humor.
Yep.
A different way of doing things, but I, like I said, I was, you know, so happy to have gone. Then not however many, 2 weeks later, grandmother dies.
No, 7 days after Pawpaw died.
7 days after, okay, it was even quicker.
Yeah.
that was... I said, I didn't even realize she was...
As sick.
As sick.
Because we had been going through so much with Meemaw and Pawpaw that we didn't even get to relay all of that
right
to you.
And it was nothing that I was mad at y'all about.
And I don't think we really 100% knew as quickly as it happened. So.
Right. But like, you know, Mom tells me whatever that we can go up to the hospital and either see her or just remember how she was. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And that was just, that kind of hit me like a bombshell. And yeah, I guess it was maybe 2 days later,
fail.
She was
yeah.
gone. So, you know, that was another one. That kind of goes back to all the whole, you know, grandparent thing I had as a kid of being jealous. And then you lose all three of them in the span of 2 months. Yeah. That was a little tougher to deal with than I thought it.
So, you know, you're talking about this year and the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm listening to you, to me, what it sounds like was these circumstances were the things that finally opened up you
yeah.
to see that you do need help with your depression.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of what happened. It's because of what those things, what that all opened up to
right.
you.
Yeah, I guess it's not always that the circumstances lead you to a bad
no.
place or lead you into, you know, depression.
Right.
It was just, you know, I was already depressed.
Yes.
These circumstances happened. I see different things in all of them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, we gotta do something. Because I was just staying low. And I felt like I could use all of those events to have an excuse
yeah.
to stay low.
Yeah.
But like you said, they kind of opened up my eyes to, you know, let's just see if there's something
right.
better.
Yes. So now you're currently taking medication?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been on it now?
Been a month now, maybe. 3 weeks, a month, something like that.
Outside of us, have you shared that with anybody? Well, now you're fixing
actually,
to share with everybody that's listening to this.
I don't actually know.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm really not sure.
When you took the step to get the help, was it a relief?
Yeah, but it's not like originally what I went to the doctor for.
Well, yeah, I know. But, you know, see, I hadn't even mentioned, like, God in any of this. But that's just how he works. You think you make the plans.
Right.
You do the things for your steps. And he, like, I'm going to throw this in here. Because, yeah, you think you're going for that. But what you're really doing is. But,
right.
yeah. So you went to the doctor for other issues.
Right.
And then just randomly opened
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I got to talking to them about my mental state and everything. And they kept, like, asking certain questions, and I just kept saying yes to all of them because they seemed like very obvious questions
yeah.
to me. But I guess I was just checking all the boxes for them. And they're like, well, how about you get on, you know, we'll try you out on.
You're on Lexapro.
Lexapro.
Yeah.
Lexapro. And see how that works. And, well, at the moment, I feel much clearer.
Yeah.
I will say that. Not that I feel like I'm more, like, in tune with my emotions or
yeah.
something like that. But I feel like I'm more open to being happy.
Yes.
Like I said, I don't know if all of that's the medicine or you know, me sitting there and it's a placebo effect because I'm taking medicine and now I think I can be this way. That's just how my mind thinks. I don't like
Yeah, he's a skeptic and he is a... An ultimate skeptic on everything. So, yeah, he's... I can tell him that it's the medication that's helping him and he'll be like, well, is it really?
I'll come up with five or six other things.
Yeah, so... my next step for him, I hope, and I'm going to continue to push, is for him to actually talk to somebody. He's looking at me kind of funny. I mean, he's literally, we're having therapy right now. So this is basically what he would be doing, is talking to a therapist and just keep continuing to dig into those emotions that he has and letting it out.
We'll see.
I actually, and I've never seen a therapist in all of my struggles. I had a friend of mine tell me, okay, because they know my story. So you went through this, you went through that, you've done all of this, and you've never seen a therapist. So you should either be a drug addict, be in rehab, or be in jail, or all the above. And all I can say is, Jesus, that's it. He's my only... The only thing I think that has kept me somewhat sane, because I ain't completely sane. I get crazy from time to time. But I've been on and off medication since I was in my 30s and back on it again. But after this year that Dylan just described, I realized that I was in an area that I didn't even know how to navigate because... To me, I am I'm a fixer. I'm the person that people depend on. Mm-hmm. Would you say that?
Correct.
100%. I was voted most dependable in my senior year. But with my... Yeah, I really was. It's in the yearbook. Oh. I can show you it.
Okay.
It's a fact.
I'll have to say that.
Okay. It's real. But I'm the one that takes care of everybody else. And even this whole entire year, that's what I've been trying to do.
Stretching yourself thin.
Very thin. And I got to a point to where I realized that I'm not okay. And so I finally reached out and I'm seeing a therapist for the first time in my life and doing it because I know I need it, but also hopefully leading by example for my boys to know that it's okay to, you know, you can still be strong, but still need help. And still need to ask. And that's the thing with mental illness is that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you can't see it. You know, someone says you have cancer, everybody's like, oh, you have cancer. You know, right. You have this disease, you have that. But with mental illness, it's not like that. But it is like that. Mental illness kills every single day.
Correct.
Living with mental illness is hell. It is absolute hell to have your mind saying and doing and causing things that you do not want to be taking place. I mean, you're telling yourself not to, and yet it is. Mental illness comes in, you know, sadness, not being able to get out of the bed, not caring about the things that you normally do. I mean, even your children and your husband can't make you happy. You know, I am blessed to have a wonderful core family here with my two boys and Don. I'm not sugarcoating it. It's pretty dadgum good. Would you say that our home life is pretty dadgum good, Dylan?
That's okay.
It's okay. And yet, it still is not enough. It's because... That's not what fixes mental illness.
Right.
Doesn't take it away. Depression just doesn't go away. It's managed. It's treated. You can become stronger. You can learn ways to manage it and cope and even overcome some of it. But I don't think it ever really goes away. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I wouldn't say there's anything that takes it away. I think the the key to... I say the key to, like, I have the answer to it.
I mean, here I am, almost 50, and been struggling, still don't have the answer. That's key to know. This is us just living through it. We're not at the finish line. The finish line will be when we're in glory with Jesus.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
But it's just like, you know, learning to face it by realizing you're stronger by coping with your own weakness.
Yes.
Just realizing that you're a much weaker person than you think you are. Because that's strength. You know, strength is not, you know, constantly persevering through things all the time and stretching yourself thin.
Right.
Strength to me is realizing that you're not strong.
Yes.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does.
But that's just what strength is the opposite of pride.
Yes.
Me being a very prideful person,
yes,
putting it that way, I would be a very weak
person.
Which I think I am in a lot of aspects. As in, you know, mental health and battling this, I would not say I'm strong. I'm just able to hide it pretty well.
Yeah.
And that leads to absolutely nothing.
But do you feel like now you're moving in the direction of getting stronger?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
You know, we say all this outside of, you know, Dylan talks about being strong and being weak, you know, and all this. We're saying this out of just dealing with acknowledging our weaknesses is a strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you take that back to our relationship with Christ, you know, we have to come to a place of complete acknowledgement. I'm using a Josh Boyd word, of depravity, before we can truly see. That's a Josh Boyd word. Before we can truly see the necessity of Christ.
Right.
We have to come to a place with our mental illness to know we can't do it on our own.
Yeah, it all comes back to like John 3:30, like he must become more, I must become less.
Yes.
That's what the whole push and pull is at all times.
Yeah.
You know, right when we start thinking we're a little bit more, we're a little bit more, things seem to follow suit and get worse.
Yes.
You know, this is how, you know, how the battle is in my head, you know, would be a lot of how, you know, Paul described, you know, the things that I want to do or the things I find myself not doing, the things I don't want to do or is what I find myself doing, something like that.
Yes.
And that's how a lot of those, like you said, a lot of those thoughts and everything you have and those voices in your head and stuff are things like you don't want to think about, things you don't want to do, and yet you do them.
I know.
Or yet you can't stop thinking about them nonstop.
Right.
Like, you know I shouldn't have these dark thoughts
in
my head, but they will not leave, and I cannot get rid of them, and that's all I can think about. Now, I don't think that's exactly what Paul was talking about.
I know what you're saying,
That's how the war that wages on your head.
And you can compare that to the war that we wage WNRs, say it, wage with sin.
Yes.
You know, it's a struggle. But I think what I want us to bring it all back to is hope. Is to hope. You know, with depression and anxiety and all the different levels of mental illness. You know, when we talk about the darkness, we talk about the emptiness, the loneliness. We haven't even used that word. The, you know, feeling that you're just, you would be, you know, you have no worth. You just don't feel like you even matter. you know, the world is just going on and on without you while you're just stuck still. The thing that I pray for this month or for forever is that people that struggle with this, you know, the first thing is to acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes it's just having to say the words out loud, to say it, get it out of your head. How many times have I told you that your entire life?
A lot.
Get it out of your head. Speak it out to someone. It makes it so much easier to manage when you let go of it, trying to hang on to all of it by yourself.
Yeah.
And give that burden to someone, to help, let somebody else help you carry it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're talking outside of Christ. He's the ultimate. You know, that's where you lay your burdens down. So, you know, I just need to understand that I'm not saying anything outside of Christ. Christ is enough, period.
Right.
We're just talking about our daily...
Yeah, but I know what scares a lot of people from saying stuff is because you have all these thoughts in your head and you're like, I cannot let these
yeah.
out. People are going to think
yeah.
I'm a crazy person, which I understand that I
yeah.
have.
And the thing is, you're going to find people that are going to think that.
You are.
You're 100%.
You're also going to... find a lot of similarities in your thoughts with other people's
it's
thoughts.
It's amazing.
Turns out you're actually, you might still be a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
But everybody is a little bit.
Yeah.
And you'll figure that out.
Yes.
So you're not alone.
No.
In those thoughts.
And that's huge. That's huge for someone who's struggling to see that and accept that you're not alone. You're not
right.
alone in your thoughts. And you know, you there's someone out there that you can trust. There's someone
mm-hmm.
out there that you can talk to. There is help. There is always hope. Always. So I'm going to ask you one question,
mm-hmm.
and you be honest, and we're going to close it back in, close it down here. I wanted to keep this under an hour. I'm getting really, really close to that. And I'm stuffy because you made me cry.
You
do have that effect on people. And so I'm just going to ask you a question from a mama
mm-hmm.
to a son, and I need your...
That would be you and me.
Yes, that's you and me. You watching me
mm-hmm.
your entire childhood, watching me battle,
mm-hmm.
struggle, overcome, struggle, win some, lose some, struggle. Always being as honest as possible.
Right.
I don't think, and you can tell me, do you ever remember a time where you didn't know what was wrong with me? For the most part?
No, not really.
Okay, because I was always so intentional about
right.
that. Me raising you the way that I raised you to be honest,
mm-hmm.
raised you to love everybody, because Christ made us all, we're all equal, made you to be, taught you to be your own person, strong-minded, you know, you don't have to follow what everybody else says, and that's bit me in the butt, teaching you how to be that way, because you are like...
I can do that.
Yeah, we know.
I cannot follow with the best of them.
But me being honest with you about everything, all of it, the dirty, the ugly, and you seeing it, what are your thoughts on it, on your thoughts on me, on your thoughts on if it's made you better, if it's made you worse, if there's things that maybe once you're a parent you might do things a little bit different in talking about the topic of mental illness. That's a long question.
No, it is. It's complex.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think how I see it, that's the only way that I would want to raise my children. I wouldn't, you know, want to raise my children, you know, shielding them from everything. I don't think that would have helped me.
Right.
I mean, that's me speaking for me.
Right.
I don't know how it affected the rest of us. I have no idea.
Right.
But I can only speak for myself. I'm saying, you know, just not, you know, being, you know, shielded from nothing. I mean, you know, we saw, you know, drug abuse and everything from a young age. And seeing that throughout, I mean, family has a pretty good history of it.
Clarify that wasn't me.
Hmm?
Clarify that wasn't
yes,
me.
Yes, it was not you.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
It was not you.
Or your dad.
Or dad.
Okay, thank you.
But I think, you know, being able to see all that, I think, helped me. And not that it didn't make me sad or nothing like that, but being able to see the lows and where, you know, you make these decisions that makes, you know, can make life go this way.
Yep.
See people, you know, with lots of hope, with lots of potential, and everything just goes down the drain.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, you know, being honest and open with everything, I mean, that's, like I said, I wouldn't want anything else.
Right.
I think being shielded is, I don't know if it's this way, but it's kind of almost being lied to a little bit.
Yeah.
And I get there might be, you know, good intentions
right.
behind it.
Right.
You know, trying, you know, to, you know, keep your kids safe and stuff like that, but at some point you're going to see everything, so
yeah,
might as well be started off that way. Just take off the blinders from early on and
yeah, the cats let, at you.
Just, you know, see life for what it is.
Yeah.
That's led to, I think, good. I might not have always taken it as good.
Yeah.
It's led to bad, too.
Yeah.
You know, me, it's led to, you know, I guess, curiosity with some things. As in, like, drugs and stuff like that. So I've fell into that sometimes more than others.
Right.
And said, I wouldn't blame most of that on, like, childhood or nothing like that. But some of it does go back to that.
Yeah, totally.
But, yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to be raised any other way. I don't think there's any other way to raise your kids. And seeing the struggles wasn't always
fun.
Super fun.
No.
At all.
Well, let me ask you one more question. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from me?
From you? Or like learned about you?
You could do both.
Your name is Jane.
And take away your funny.
From Chicago. I've learned from you. I've learned, the first thing that always comes to my mind is, you know, compassion. It's the first thing always I get from you. You're an extremely compassionate person. Do I think sometimes you're overly compassionate?
Yes.
Is it wrong to be overly compassionate? I don't know. I haven't come to that conclusion yet. But, you know, learn to be, you know, strong-willed, definitely. Perseverance. You've had a lot of times where you could have given up, for sure. And I don't think anybody would have blamed you for it. But you didn't. You're kind of a glue to the family. So I do thank you for that.
Okay, you're welcome.
But, I guess just kind of, you know, just learned, you know, how to love through all situations. Even when it's not easy to. And forgiveness, which is something I struggle with all the time. You also might struggle with that, but you at least don't seem to. You forgive, no matter what.
You know, you say in those two things, love and forgiveness. I think that was one of the first places where when I could feel myself getting over that hump of darkness and depression that I still have, but the big